Devi is buying a used delivery van from Trueline Motors for $18,000. Before she signs, the salesperson makes two promises: a free 12-month warranty, and that the van has never been in an accident. Neither promise makes it into the contract, a careful document ending with a clause saying it is the entire and final agreement. A month later, the transmission fails, and Debbie learns the van had, in fact, been wrecked. Which promise can she prove? Only the second one. Same salesperson, same conversation, same clause, opposite answers. Understand why, and you understand this whole topic. By the end of this episode, you will run any contract content question in three steps, and you will know exactly which sources of meaning outrank which. Here is the route. First, the parole evidence rule, the three-step method, and the exceptions no merger clause can touch. Then the UCC version, which is friendlier to context. Then interpretation, ambiguity, and whose meaning wins. Then the priority ladder for custom and conduct. And finally, the terms the parties left out. Start with the name, because it lies. Parole means oral. But the rule reaches prior writings too: drafts, emails, letters. Here is the problem it solves. Two parties negotiate, then sign a writing they intend as final. It would gut that writing if either side could later drag in a hallway promise. One timing point does all the work. The rule bars prior agreements, oral or written, and contemporaneous oral agreements. It never touches a subsequent agreement. Quick challenge: a promise made 2 weeks after signing. Parole evidence or modification? Modification. And despite the name, this is contract law, not evidence. Every problem yields to the same three questions. Step 1. Is the writing integrated? Did they intend it as a final expression of some of their terms? If it was only a draft, the rule does not apply. Step 2. Partial or complete? Step 3. What is the evidence offered to do? Step 2. A partial integration is final as to the terms it contains, but not the whole story. A complete integration is final and exclusive, the entire deal. How does a judge tell? Under the traditional four corners view, the Williston approach, the judge looks only at the document. Complete and careful on its face means fully integrated. Under the modern approach, the Corbin view, the judge may look at all the surrounding circumstances, even the side agreement being offered. The restatement position, and the growing majority. Either way, one clause matters enormously. A merger clause. This document is the entire and final agreement. Under four corners, nearly conclusive. Under the modern view, powerful, but not the last word. Now step 3, the distinction the exam loves. To contradict is to offer a term that conflicts with one already in the writing. Barred, whenever the writing is integrated at all. To supplement is to add a consistent term the writing is silent about. Allowed against a partial integration. Barred against a complete one. To explain is to interpret an ambiguous term already there. Allowed even against a complete integration, because clarifying meaning is not changing the deal. Explain is friendliest. Contradict, harshest. Supplement turns on partial versus complete. Quick challenge. Complete integration, and the evidence explains an ambiguous word. In or out? In. Back to Devi. Trueline Motors gave her a careful document listing the van, the price, and the closing date, ending in a merger clause. That reads as a complete integration. The oral warranty is a prior term she wants to add, and a consistent addition cannot supplement a complete integration. Barred. A warranty is what a buyer would insist be written down. But the rule assumes a valid final writing to protect. a whole category of evidence slips past it because it does not vary a valid deal. It attacks whether one exists. Six of them. 1. Any formation or enforceability defense. Fraud, misrepresentation, duress, mistake, illegality, unconscionability, lack of consideration. 2. An oral condition precedent to the effectiveness of the whole contract. Not effective unless financing came through. 3. Interpretation of an ambiguous term. 4. A genuine collateral agreement, a side deal with its own consideration. 5. Reformation for a scrivener's error. 6. A later modification. No merger clause reaches them, which is why Devi wins on the second promise. The van has never been in an accident, and it had been. She is not adding a term. She is proving fraud, attacking whether the deal was validly formed at all. The merger clause cannot touch that. Part 2. Sale of Goods. Article 2 supplies its own parole evidence rule in Section 2-202, and it is noticeably friendlier to context. Same core. A final writing cannot be contradicted by prior or contemporaneous evidence. Two features drive the difference. First, trade context is presumed part of the deal. Course of performance, course of dealing, and usage of trade explain or supplement the writing, even if it is complete and exclusive, unless carefully negated. And a merger clause does not do that. Second, the test for keeping an extra term out of a complete and exclusive writing is demanding. Would it certainly have been included if the parties had agreed to it? If yes, and it is missing, it is out. If it might naturally have been left out, it comes in. Olympia Mills and Cascade Cotton sign a final contract for 500 bales of cotton, silent on grade. Trade custom reads unspecified bales as middling, and in three prior contracts, these two always shipped premium. Both come in to explain the bare word bales. But an oral cap of 300 bales contradicts the written 500. Explaining bales is fine. Overriding 500 is not. Part 3. Interpretation asks what the words the parties did use actually mean. The goal is their intent as objectively expressed. Under the traditional plain meaning rule, still the majority starting point, an unambiguous term gets its plain meaning. Outside evidence comes in only once the term is ambiguous. Ambiguity has two flavors. A patent ambiguity is obvious on the face of the document, a blank or a self-contradiction. A latent ambiguity is hidden. It surfaces only when clear words meet the real world and fit two things equally well. The modern approach hears the circumstances first, to find ambiguity not on the page. Sometimes each side honestly attached a different meaning to the same term. If both, in fact, meant the same thing, that shared meaning controls, even if it is odd. If they meant different things, and one knew of the other's meaning while that other did not, the innocent meaning controls. But if neither knew, and the term is material, there is no meeting of the minds and no contract. The classic illustration is goods to arrive on the ship Peerless, where two ships share the name. One sails in October, one in December. Each meant a different ship. No contract. Once a term is genuinely ambiguous, the canons come out. Read the whole contract together and give every clause meaning. Construe genuine ambiguity against the drafter, contra proferentum, which bites hardest against whoever wrote the form. Specific, handwritten or typed terms beat general pre-printed boilerplate. A typed line permitting one small dog beats the printed no pets clause above it. Ejusdem generis. A catch-all after a list of specifics is limited to the same class, so shoes, boots, sandals, and other footwear does not reach handbags. Part 4. Three sources supply what the words leave unsaid. Course of performance is how these parties have actually performed this same contract, where performance is repeated and the other side accepts without objection. It shows what the parties thought their own words required, the best single indicator. Course of dealing is a pattern from prior contracts between these same parties. Usage of trade is a practice so regularly observed in a place, vocation, or trade that the parties can be expected to have intended it, aware of it or not. A newcomer is bound by custom they have never heard of. Now the latter, from section 1-303. First, try to read express terms and conduct as consistent. When they truly conflict, express terms beat all three. Course of performance beats course of dealing and usage of trade, and course of dealing beats usage of trade. Quick challenge. Trade custom says light gauge. These parties' past contracts say light gauge, but under this contract, the buyer has accepted heavy gauge 6 times without objection. Which wins? Course of performance. It does double duty. A pattern can itself show a term was waived or modified. A lease says rent is due on the 1st, but for 2 years, the landlord takes it on the 10th without complaint. That course of performance may waive strict compliance, though the landlord can usually reinstate it with notice. Part 5. The parties left a gap. A court does not throw out the contract. If they intended to be bound, and there is a reasonably certain basis for a remedy, the court supplies a term reasonable in the circumstances. Restatement Section 204. A homeowner hires a contractor to remodel a kitchen for a fair price, with no figure and no date. Filled, not fatal. Distinguish two kinds. An implied in fact term is one the court infers the parties actually intended from their conduct. A studio always paid before it delivers files has one. An implied in law term is imposed regardless of intent. Above all, the duty of good faith and fair dealing, which no gap filling overrides. For goods, the UCC supplies defaults. Open price, a reasonable price at the time of delivery, section 2-305. The one term a court will not supply is quantity, but an output or requirements term is measured by actual good faith output or requirements. Section 2-306. A restaurant quadrupling its coffee orders to resell the surplus is not stating a requirement. A word on authorities, because this episode named no case at all, and that was deliberate. This topic is rules and method, not case names. Next Gen questions hand you a signed contract and a disputed promise and ask, what comes in? The law comes from the restatement and from Article 2. Williston's Four Corners and Corbin's Modern View are labels for a disagreement, not authorities to cite. If you keep only three things, keep these. The three-step method, because it turns every fact pattern into the same drill. The exceptions list, because a merger clause cannot reach a defense to formation. And the latter, express, performance, dealing, trade. Now, the traps. 1. Do not read parole as oral only. Prior writings are barred too, and the rule never touches a later agreement. That is modification. 2. The rule presupposes a valid final writing, so fraud, duress, mistake, illegality, and a condition precedent to effectiveness always come in. A merger clause cannot bar them. 3. Keep, contradict, supplement, and explain apart. Even a complete integration can be explained, and a partial one can be supplemented. Only contradiction is barred across the board. 4. Under the UCC, do not exclude usage of trade, course of dealing, or course of performance just because there is a merger clause. They come in unless carefully negated. 5. Do not invert the ladder. 6. A merger clause makes complete integration likely, not automatic, under the modern majority. And spot the switch first. Goods or not? Because Section 2-202 is more generous. Time for the quick check. And this one comes straight from the Bargo Question Bank. A bakery and a flour mill sign a final contract for 20 tons of bread flour a month with a merger clause. In the milling trade, ton universally means the 2,000-pound short ton. The mill ships short tons. The bakery sues, insisting ton means the heavier long ton and that the merger clause bars trade evidence. Article 2 governs. May the mill introduce the trade usage? Option 1. No, because the merger clause excludes all outside evidence. Option 2. Yes, because usage of trade explains a writing unless the parties carefully negate it. Option 3. No, because trade usage comes in only when a UCC writing is not integrated. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is option 2. Section 2-202 treats usage of trade, course of dealing, and course of performance as part of the party's language. They explain or supplement even a complete and exclusive writing unless carefully negated, and an ordinary merger clause does not do that. So the settled trade meaning of ton comes in. Option 1 is the strict common law view of merger clauses, which Article 2 deliberately relaxes for commercial context. That is exactly why it tempts you. Option 3 is backwards. Trade usage comes in against integrated writings, too. There are 30-plus more questions on this topic alone, each option explained like that. 5 things to take away. 1. Parole means oral, but the rule bars prior writings, too, and it never reaches a later agreement. That is modification. 2. Contradict is barred against any integration. Supplement is allowed only against a partial one. Explain gets in almost anywhere. 3. Fraud, duress, mistake, illegality, a condition precedent, reformation for a clerical slip. A merger clause cannot bar any of them. 4. Under Section 2-202, trade usage, course of dealing, and course of performance come in even against a complete and exclusive writing, unless carefully negated.
5. The latter.
Express terms, then course of performance, then course of dealing, then usage of trade. Which is why Devi loses her warranty and wins her fraud claim, on the same clause and the same conversation. Next time, performance, conditions, and good faith. Practice this topic with more than 2,900 exam-style questions. Free to start at nextgenbargo.com. This episode is for education and exam preparation only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the NCBE or any bar examining authority.